Greet you in Jesus' name. I had, a suggestion or a request for a message on, I think it was worded to me, the two kingdoms. And I'm guessing it had to do with, probably at least for that individual, I don't think we had a long conversation, but I think it partly had to do with being an election year and all the signs and things that we see around and how that sometimes affects us and our thinking. As I was studying that a bit, I discovered that there was two sentences that I have read probably most of my life that I was combining wrongly in my head, so this didn't go exactly where I thought it would. At the same time, still think I'd like to touch on that a bit. So if you would open your Bible to Luke chapter 4. Luke 4, we have Christ facing temptation. We're told at least some of them. And it seems the ones that are listed are perhaps, can I say, samples of temptation that we all face, not necessarily that we face it just like Christ did, but that the different angles of the temptation are probably a way that things at times tempt us. I'd like to focus especially on the temptation mentioned in Luke chapter 4, verse 5 through 8. So let's just read those verses. Luke chapter 4, verse 5. And the devil, taking him up into an high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. And Jesus answered and said unto him, get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. I found it interesting that in this temptation, if I would have been in Christ's shoes, it seems like I could have had a lot of different ways to respond to this. One, first of all, was this really Satan's to give away? Did he have control like he said he did and all that? But I find it fascinating that Christ actually, I don't know if I should say accepted, but left that all go and didn't really focus on the truth or the falsity of what he had said. He didn't really focus on the temptation itself, but he brought it back to worship. And I had to think, as I think about two kingdoms, or I'll use a different phrase in a bit here, but as we think about kingdoms, maybe we'd call it countries, systems of government, the difference between Christian and an unchristian comes back to what we worship, what we esteem, what we look up to. And that's where Christ brought it back to. So to me, as we go through this, I'm not necessarily be mentioning worship all the time, but as we think about the world around us, as we think of Christ in my heart, I'm different because of what I worship. So what are some of the characteristics or values of this kingdom? I'm going to call, since we're in time and on this world, I'm going to just refer to this kingdom. Let's keep it So what are some characteristics or value of this kingdom, the one we live in, the country we live in, the system we live under as in government? Anyone? Give me a few. What's valuable to them? What are some things they appreciate? Money. Okay, money. What else?
Power.
Anything else?
Fame.
Any more? Anything else? Okay. Was it entertainment? Did I catch that right? Okay, that's probably good. Personal responsibility, or lack thereof, I guess we should say, right? Okay, the ones mentioned in this passage evidently are, Satan mentions all power. Something a lot of countries are concerned about is where they rate whether they have a nuclear arc, what they call nuclear deterrent, which anyways, and all that. They're concerned about who has power, who has a large military, who has weapons for that military, and so on. And also within the country itself, power is a big thing. Then he also mentions glory. We could probably tie that into the word that was given, fame, maybe money to some extent, entertainment, a lot of people glory in that. And then the rest of these that were given are great as well. They're all things that the kingdom, or kingdoms really of this world, are concerned about, things they work on, things they try to control, things... I had some others that aren't on this list, like security, sort of tied into power. They want to be in control of their destiny, of themselves, stability, or at least what they consider stability, which is knowing what's going to happen. Economic well-being ties into some of the ones that were given. Okay, I was trying to figure out how to illustrate this a bit. As we relate to this, as a Christian, face this thing of living in the world, and yet, get ahead of myself, but evidently Christ says there's a different focus point. He mentioned worship, and I think there's also some other things. So who can tell me what this is? Okay, could be checkers, could also be something else. Anybody want to tell me what else you play on a board like that? Chess, thank you. If I should bother setting these all up or not. How many of you know how to play chess? A good number of you. Well, if you get bored, come play chess with me. I have a hard time finding people that'll play for some reason. Got something switched around here anyway. One thing about chess is, have any of you tried to play chess by yourself? Anyone? No? I have. Does anybody want to tell me what you think the result of playing chess with yourself is? There you go. That was the nice thing about it. The not so nice thing about it was that I had to pick the winner, right? Of the colors. It was nice in that I could win no matter what, but at the same time I had to pick a winner between white and black, we normally call these, even though these tones are a little different on this game. And that's okay as far as it goes, I guess, if you're learning moves, but that's sort of anticlimactic to play chess with yourself, because finally you start sympathizing with one side or the other a little bit. You follow what I'm saying? If one side's winning, you either sort of have to have compassion in your heart for that poor side and start giving it a break, or you decide, well, that side's just dumb, so I'm going to finish it off here. And in that way, I'd like to compare the world we live in a bit to a chessboard. And actually, I had a couple other message suggestions where I might use this example again. And the reason I'm making you watch me set these up, I thought of doing it beforehand, but I was pretty sure trying to move it from underneath the pulpit to out here, my pieces would end up in disarray, so I thought I would just do it this way, and I'm still having trouble anyways. So, I'm not going to make a lot of moves, but we'll go... So I can't really have a successful, I guess, or at least be safe to say fulfilling game of chess without an opponent, can I? I need someone else to work against me, and then that brings out, hopefully, the best in me. Because chess as a game requires strategy, planning. It requires commitment, and when you're trying to do both, you can't really do it. Because if I already know what this side's going to do before it does it, that sort of defeats the whole purpose of playing chess. In chess, the reason I enjoy chess, at least partially just for myself, is as I sit and play chess with you, I'm trying to predict in my head possibly what are all the other options or moves you have to make. At least the smart ones, if you make the dumb ones, that don't really matter. And so I'm sitting there, as I play chess, I'm sitting there trying to figure out what's this person going to do. They can go here, in which case I do what? This or this. And in life, I would suggest that, not to minimize life and bring it down to a chess game, but it's very similar. Listen to this verse out of Luke. If you still have your Bible open, turn to Luke chapter 16 now. Let Christ say this in his own words. As we think of these kingdoms and the war between them. Luke chapter 16, verse 13, Christ speaking says, "No servant," we could say no one really because we're all servants to something. "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." We mistakenly in our circles often translate mammon as money. It's basically anything this world would consider valuable, wealth of any kind. So you cannot serve God and whatever else you would make valuable in your life. It's just as foolish for me to sit down with a chessboard and think I'm going to have a fulfilling game of chess all by myself as it is to think that I can serve two things. And the servant generally in Scripture would have a stronger tie-in than what we would use for employee, but just think of this for example. I've had in my life, I've had people that were working with me that were trying to work for other people as well, and how did that go, you think? Even with the best intentions, it causes some conflict, doesn't it? Just sooner or later, that schedule doesn't work, then what? Sooner or later, somebody pulls and the other one's pulling at the same time, something gives, right? And I'm not saying that in a negative way necessarily. That may be good for a time and place. Yet at the same time, it's not really a viable long-term solution. If someone I'm working with long-term wants to have two jobs, I tell them, quit, go do what you want to do. I'd rather have you doing what you want to do than try to do two things. Anyone thinking they can successfully serve two masters has just effectively proved themselves a fool. We will inevitably, unavoidably make a winner out of one and a loser out of the other. Now, I'd like to go to John chapter 18 now, and these are the verses that I've read for many years, and just reading them again, it got a different twist on it for myself. Perhaps you all have read these correctly all your life, and yeah, blessed you if you are. I'll just explain what challenged me a bit here. So I'm going to jump into Christ's trial, or Christ before Pilate. John chapter 18, verse 35. We have this conversation that's seemed like the Jews were accusing Christ of all kinds of things, and somehow Pilate got a hold of this thing that Jesus was calling himself a king, or at least he thought he was. So verse 35, John chapter 18, 35, Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew?" In other words, am I from your people? "Thine own nation, the chief priests, have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews, but now is my kingdom not from hence." Pilate therefore said unto him, "Art thou a king then?" Jesus answered, "Thou sayest I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness of the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice." I paraphrase this or put this into my own words, so I'll just reread that now. Pilate rhetorically asked, "Am I a Jewish person? It is your people, it is your authorities that are accusing and condemning you. What have you done to make them feel this way about you? Jesus replied, my allegiance, the kingdom I'm working for, are not of this world. If they were, those that serve me would fight for my freedom to save me from those you're calling my people. Pilate questioned, are you a king? After all, somebody's fighting for you, right? He's somewhat like a king. Jesus answered, you are the one who keeps insisting I'm a king. I was born and came into the world to witness of and share truth. All those who know and accept truth have heard my voice, for that is truth. So what I was misreading to myself is where Christ replied to Pilate, thou sayest I am a king. There's a period there. Did you notice that? Thou sayest I'm a king, period. Christ wasn't really actually calling himself a king at this point. Because he goes on to say, to this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I would bear witness to truth. Yes, I'm not disputing Christ's kingship, don't get me wrong. At the same time, Christ, as a person before Pilate, the focus was on truth. Not on some office, whatever, that he filled, but just on truth. In a way, that brings it back to worship. You know, when we consider the two kingdoms, or like Christ said, my kingdom's not of this world, we often consider this passage, it seems to me, we pretty strongly tie it into a focus on government, military involvement, and all that. And while that's part of it, that's far from all of it. Let's just think about this other kingdom, as I'm going to call it. The other kingdom. What are some characteristics of this other kingdom? Can y'all give me some now, just like give me some characteristics or values of this other kingdom, and you're free to get them out of that passage if you like. Service. Love. Obedience. Truth. I was wondering if you'd miss that one. Any more you want to say? Worship in spirit and in truth. Anything else you want to put on that list? I'll add a couple. I had a almost goes with it, yet might make a side note on it. So I just put honesty with truth. See, I think the main other one I had is humility. I'd thought of putting pride on the other list and left it go. Then I'll just put 7 as, blanking out on myself. Faith. That's probably enough for today. You can go make your own list and put more on it. I'd like to put a somewhat heavy emphasis on truth, since that's what Christ pointed at again as he talked to Pilate, was truth. Pilate actually, and at least in one of these passages, asked, what is truth? And then Christ, in sharing with him here, is saying that that's his whole reason for coming, at least as a human, was to bear witness to truth. And that everyone who has heard truth has heard his voice. In a way, we could call this other kingdom the kingdom of truth, if we would want to. And again, I don't want to in any way leave the feeling or whatever that God and truth are inseparable, because they're absolutely not. But it's interesting to me how heavily Christ focused on truth as being the separating or the deciding factor between which kingdom you're part of, right? Truth. All who are truly part of his kingdom have heard and accepted truth. Someone who does not wholly and fully follow truth is on the road to self-deception. I've been in different conversations where people talk about, how do I keep from being deceived? Let me tell you, friends, this morning, I think there's just one way to make sure you're not deceived, and that's be willing to follow truth wherever it leads you. And that's not always easy. Sometimes it can be very hard, but are you willing to follow truth wherever it leads you? It's not about being for this party or that candidate, as we see out in the world, or against this person or against that idea, but it's about what is truth. Simply truth. It's about being a representative of truth in all I do, in how I do all I do. And tied closely into that is honesty. You know, to look at things squarely without evasion or sugarcoating. You know, I've found it somewhat paradoxical that I have known a couple people in my life who I would say prided themselves in their honesty. And yet as I got to observe them over a period of years, I would say most to all of those that focused on their honesty rather than focused on truth ended up being dishonest and just not realizing it. And so it comes back to me that we have to focus on truth, not so much what I view as truth, but actually truth itself. And in a way that tied into something I wanted to mention on faith, recently I had somebody tell me something that I was thinking about. Humility and all these, worship, love, service, all play rules in this as well. I don't have time to focus on them. But it's an interesting comment made to me, and I think it ties into this thing on truth that I've been sharing on, is the comment was made, most people have more faith in their belief system, or in their faith, if you will, than what they have faith in God. And I've found that to be very true. There's many, many people that will tell you quite readily what they believe, but their belief is in a system rather than in God himself, as in truth. And that's very dangerous. Again, follow truth where it leads. Pilate wasn't willing to, Christ was. Moving on, someone who's uncertain in their allegiance to truth, we could say, cannot be a soldier for Christ or of Christ. I'd like for you to turn to 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 and 2 now. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 and 2. We cannot be uncertain in our allegiance. Yet at the same time, we do find ourselves in an interesting situation in that we are living in this earthly kingdom, if you will, right now. All of us, I'm guessing, I don't know, there may be some that are citizens of another country, but probably by far most of us are citizens of the United States as a country. And so in that way, we find ourselves in this kingdom, in this time, in this place, and yet, if any of you are claiming to be a Christian, the reality is you're supposed to be working for this other kingdom. So that's going to create some conflict. Like I said, no man can serve two masters. How do we work through some of the technical parts of this? How do we relate to this kingdom while focusing and working for the other kingdom? 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 and 2. I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. Then he specifically mentions for kings, rulers, and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. I faced a situation in the last couple years that I thought maybe would illustrate. How far do we take this? And I don't know myself. I think we have to be careful. We have to be willing to consider some things. I've had quite a few of you up there, actually. And I've talked about this river before, but there's a place I love to go, and that's on the Buffalo River. And for those of you who have been with me, if you had your eyes open, and maybe we even talked about it, there's a sign up on the bank that says something about, after a certain point, no more than 10 horsepower. Any of you remember that sign? That sign is a problem for me. Because so happens that unless I want to paddle a boat all day up and down the White River, which I don't, that's ferociously hard work if anybody wonders most of the time, my smallest motor that I have for a boat is 40 horsepower, unless I use a trolling motor. So I had come up with a good working solution is I would use the big motor to get me up to the sign, and then I would use a trolling motor from there on, and I figured I was obeying what the sign said. Well, one fine day, fellow enjoyer of the Buffalo River sort of reamed me out for having my boat up there. My motor's marked. I don't necessarily believe in deceit. It would be fun to change that number, wouldn't it? But it does say what it is. And he told me that I shouldn't be up there with that motor. I said, well, I've not been using it. He said, it don't matter. He said, the right person, if the authority saw you, they would give you a ticket and a big one. I'm like, okay, well, I guess if that's how it works, I should probably see. I don't necessarily think there is sometimes things that are understood differently. Perhaps speed limit would be a part of that. I'm not one that I think it's good to speed per se. At the same time, how can I say? I don't want to be hitting my brakes now when I see a policeman. At the same time, sometimes I'm goofing off and I do check myself, so I admit to that too. But at the same time, if I set my cruise and I see an authority beside the road, I don't want to be hitting my brakes. That's where my conscience takes me on that one, even though I don't necessarily do exactly what's posted. But back to this boat situation, I said, well, I guess there's one way to solve this is just call the person that would write me the ticket and ask him, would you actually give me one, or can I be up there as long as I don't use it, as long as I tilt it up or something? And so I called him, took a little bit of doing to get a hold of him, and he said, yeah, I don't want you on there with it, so, wow. And that was, okay, I'll try to do that. Well, here a couple weeks to months ago, I was up there, and there were some other people that weren't even trying to read the sign. They weren't even trying to obey it. They had an 80 horse on their motor, and they were ripping around, making life miserable for the rest of us. And I get a ticket if I do this, or I'm told I will, and yet they can be twice as bad, so to speak, and it's just fine. Nobody does anything. Yet at the same time, I guess this next verse, I'd like to read this next verse. What I do with that as I consider these verses in Peter, 1 Peter chapter 2, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11 through 17. First Peter chapter 2, verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that, whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme, or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing ye may be able to put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. May I read a little excerpt to you here? Something I was reading this morning. One of the outstanding points of true Christians throughout history has been their carefulness and respect as it regards rulers of the earthly kingdom. Even when persecuted for what they could not in good conscience obey, they remained respectful to authority and obedient to that which they could. Now, a question, if you read the Martyr's Mirror or you look back at court records and things, even in this country, of people that face some persecution for living up to their convictions on maybe especially military draft and so on. One of the questions that's been asked and probably will continue to be asked is, have you obeyed and submitted to all the laws that do not contradict or conflict with what God has asked of you? That's a pretty common question for draft boards, judges, whatever. When you're trying to say that you have a conviction on something they're asking you to do, is they like to return the favor. And have you obeyed and submitted to all the laws that do not contradict or conflict with what God has asked of you? And you know what? Guess what? If I insist on taking a 40 horse up the motor, whether I use it or not, I can't say honestly I have, can I? If my daughters would ever be called before a judge for not supporting the country in some way or other, and I was asked that question. So it means I have to be rather conscientious. After all, I said, do it for conscience sake, not out of fear. We keep going. There'll be a lot of nuances to this thing. How far do we take politicians? I know a lot of them, and most of them would be quite happy if I'd give them a check every once in a while to help their campaign. Can I do that? I don't think so. I pay my taxes, But I'm going to have to let that representative, I guess, hopefully decide he's mature enough to still be a friend, even though I don't contribute to his campaign. It's not that I don't like the man. That way we could keep going. It's the difference between paying taxes or paying someone, whether it's a government official for a campaign or whether it's paying an organization that lobbies them to do what I want to do. I think that would really be off. I think that would be trying to play chess on both sides of the board, wouldn't it? Seemed like it. What about jury duty? It's another one that we get a fair bit here. You know what's interesting is I was thinking about jury duty. Is the reason I can't serve on a jury, number one, is in a court trial, it's really not about right and wrong. Believe it or not, you don't like to hear that as Americans, I'm sure. But it's not really about right or wrong. It's about what the U.S. law says about stuff. And the U.S. law, while it's probably good in some respects, is really bad in other respects. And as a Christian, how could I sit there and try to interpret laws that are written by people that don't even care what right and wrong is, as in an intent to determine punishment or innocence of someone else? We could keep going, just some things that were in my mind. Now, I do believe in helping people. Some years ago, coming home from work one day, I'd come around the curve, and this pickup truck sailed across the ditch and into some trees. There was no way he was going to get out on his own. I happened to have a chain along, so we stopped, first of all, to make sure he was okay. Well, here it was a local politician from this area, and it happened that he was running for re-election. That was about this time of the year, or actually maybe it was a little later, closer to the election, if anything. And this man was just as desperate as could be to get out of those trees and down the road and hide that truck. I don't know what all his reasons were. I still don't know to this day. I don't know if I did the right thing or not, but I did pull him out of the ditch and left him run down the road with his bumper dragging so he could hide his truck. So I don't know what all the factors were there. But I think if we see somebody in a ditch, we can help them regardless of whether it's their thing. I'd like to go to Romans chapter 13, verse 1 through 8, where Paul addresses some more parts of this. A bit more. Romans chapter 13, verse 1 through 8. Romans 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto higher powers. I think he's especially referring to in the government here, civil government, world system. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. And you can get into all kinds of bunny trails there, but we'll keep going. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is a minister or servant of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth hath fulfilled the law. I received a letter in the mail a couple weeks ago that I would much rather not have seen. I said something about the Internal Revenue Service on it, and this time of the year I don't like to see letters from them. Sometimes they're a little bit expected, and they claim that I owed them quite a bit of money because my accountant didn't file something he was supposed to. Well, my accountant wants to dispute that with them, and I did tell him he could write a letter to them. At the same time, you know, if they're going to press the issue, just pay it. Just pay it, right? He says he attends upon tribute for this very thing. And I, for one, want to feel like I have done all I can to live up to what God has, yet still not try to play chess on both sides of the board. To recap a bit, Christian living requires strategy, planning, and commitment. I cannot work in two different kingdoms. Anyone thinking they can successfully serve two masters has just effectively proved themselves a fool. Someone who's uncertain in their allegiance. Now, I need to maybe clarify. What I'm talking about uncertain is unsure what they really want. I'm not talking somebody that's maybe struggling with sensitivity. But someone who's uncertain their allegiance is not a soldier of Christ. He requires full allegiance. Someone who does not wholly and fully follow truth is on the path to self-deception. True Christians are marked by their carefulness and respect towards the rulers of the earthly kingdom. True Christians follow truth, cost what it may. Now you listen closely. I'd like to read Hebrews 13, verse 12 and 14 to you yet. So Hebrews 13, verse 12. Wherefore, talking of Jesus being our sacrifice, wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. He wasn't part of it. He was outside. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp. Let us also be part of being the outside, bearing his reproach. For we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Let's kneel for prayer.